Hello, this is indeed UU Todd Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and you are in fact listening to Loafer's Glory number 65. When I am old, I will not wear purple, the color of veins underlining advancing years, the color of thin-blooded bruises, the color of my prose whenever I think about it. No, when I am old, I will wear nothing. Well, here we are again. It's me, Utah Phillips. Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. As Steve Baker, again, the Borsdorfs, playing that wonderful opening music. And that poem I made up myself on account of I can't stand the other one. It's a little just too wishy-washy, I suppose you'd call it, you know. And we are in Nevada City here, and this is, I know I'm not supposed to be time specific because I don't know when this is going to be played around the country, but I am stuck in this time, and I can't get out of it until the next time. So it's between 11 o'clock and noon on Sunday. That's the time I wanted to broadcast because people are getting out of church then, and I wanted to put them through some rehab. This also is Mother's Day. I think about that. Think about what Betty Friedan said. Yeah. A world without women, a country without women, that's stagnation. And we're here in Nevada City, California. It's okay, Steve. This too shall pass. Nevada City, California, the theory of the leisure class in practice. Well, now, tomorrow, Monday, is my 65th birthday, and I intend to mark that myself with a little self-indulgent present to me, and that's only to play things that I really like. I don't care if it's trash or not. You just have to put up with it. Okay, you've stuck with me this far. Stick with me a little longer, and we're just going to sit around and, as we say out here, plug the dung. Radio. Radio is one of my great loves. I grew up with it. You know, I remember my first little Melmac radio. Before that, my crystal set I've talked about before, that where I hand-wound the coil, germanium crystal, the antenna wire out through a hole in the screen to the apple tree outside my window there in Dayton, Ohio. I could lie under the covers and push that little thing back and forth, a little slide back and forth over the coil, and pop that cat hair around in that crystal and pick up marvels and wonders from near and far. I could pick up late at night those amazing, powerful stations down on the Texas border. I can almost hear it. It sounded like this coming over the wireless. Howdy, 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 neighbors. This is Clint, C-L-I-N-T, Clint, Texas, coming at you with a recorded program of picking and singing country style. Now, neighbors, before we commence to begin, I want to remind you this is absolutely your last and final opportunity to send in 25 cents for your big hymn book of 101 favorite hymns, spirituals, and recitations. So now, neighbors, you send in 25 cents for your big hymn book of 101 favorite hymns, spirituals, and recitations. You're going to receive free gratis for nothing, a crucifix of our Savior. It's 11 inches high and 6 inches across. It's luminescent. That's glow in the dark, folks. Now, all you good people, send in 25 cents for your big hymn book of 101 favorite hymns, spirituals, and recitations. You put your hand on the radio, and I'm going to bless you all. You feel that warmth, neighbor. That's the love and warmth of the Lord. But if you don't send in 25 cents for your big hymn book, a 101 favorite hymn, spiritual recitation, and put your hand on that radio, you go plumb to the fiery furnace of hell. We're going to return you to a recorded program of picking and singing country style, featuring you, Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest. Now, this is a living room recording, a home recording, made by my mother when I was a kid, of my first trumpet recital.
Ha 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 ha
Oh boy, that was a really embarrassing occasion, one of the great embarrassments of my life. That's why when I decided I didn't want to be a musician, and I have stuck to that, I have cleaved unto that for the rest of my life. As I approach and transcend the age of 65, I cast my mind back to profound associations that really had a real change, caused me to change my life. I remember when I left Utah in 1969, fetched up in Saratoga Springs, New York, as a folk music town in those days. And I was sort of taken in by the Brownell sisters, Dorothea and Harriet Brownell, up on Circular Street. Fine, elegant, elderly women in their 70s. I knew them well up into their 80s. They lived in the house their grandfather built. They slept in the beds that they were born in. And they were the history of Saratoga County. Now, Harriet, a fine poet and well-published, Dorothea, a skilled social worker during the Depression, full of stories, full of light, full of beauty. And oh, those summer evenings on their front porch looking out on the garden, and the ballet stars from that were performing up there for the summer theater would come through, and other poets. It was quite a mix of people there. There was a young fella that cared for them, that cared for the house. He was a very talented human being who I think never wanted to have his name mentioned in a medium such as this. And he would put up the storm windows and take care of the garden, do all the things that were necessary around the house. Now, Harriet Brownell loved the old Victorian parlor songs, The Weepers. This young fellow knew one of those. Harriet Brownell's favorite song was called The Fatal Wedding. Now, I wanted to learn that song. At least I wanted a recording of it because I'd never heard it before. It was a rare old song. I mailed him a tape recorder, one of these drugstore tape recorders, not a very good one, and I sent him a tape. And he went kind of into the front hall of that old house, and he recorded The Fatal Wedding, but the trucks going by in the streets and the cooking going on in the kitchen. So this is a field recording, no question about it. From the Brownell Parlor, The Fatal Wedding.
Henry, I have no idea whether I'll successfully sing into it or not, but I'm going to try to forget it here. Got an apple pie in the oven. Dorothy is out taking things to the rummage sale. Isn't that great? Okay, The Fatal Wedding. The wedding bells were ringing on a moonlit winter's night. The church was decorated, all within was gay and bright. A mother with her baby came and saw the lights aglow. She thought of how those same bells chimed for her 3 years ago, I'd like to be admitted, sir, she told the sexton old, just for the sake of baby, to protect him from the cold. He told her that the wedding there was for the rich and grand, and with the eager watching crowd, outside she'd have to stand. While the wedding bells were ringing, while the bride and groom were there, marching up the aisle together as the organ pealed an air, telling tales of fond affection, vowing never more to part, just another fatal wedding, just another broken heart. She asked the sexton once again to let her come inside. For baby's sake, you may come in, the gray old man replied. If anyone knows reason why this couple may not wed, speak now or hold your peace forevermore, the preacher said. I must object, the woman cried with voice so meek and mild. The bridegroom is my husband, sir, and this our little child. What proof have you, the preacher said, my infant, she replied. She raised the babe, then knelt to pray. The little one had died. While the wedding bells were ringing, while the bride and groom were there, marching up the aisle together, as the organ played an air, telling tales of fond affection, vowing never more to part, just another fatal wedding, just another broken heart. The parents of the bride then took the outcast by the arm. We'll care for you through life, they said. You've saved our child from harm. The outcast wife, the bride, and parents quickly drove away. The husband died by his own hand before the break of day. No wedding feast was held that night. Two graves were made next day, one for the little baby, and in one the father lay. The story has been often told by firesides warm and bright, of bride and groom, of outcast and the fatal wedding night. While the wedding bells were ringing, while the bride and groom were there, marching up the aisle together, while the organ played an air, telling tales of fond affection, vowing never more to part, just another fatal wedding, just another broken heart. that's a real jewel of late Victorian sentimentality. Supposedly it happened in Rochester.
Oh, yeah. Brownell's front porch, well, that was in the little front hall there with all the trucks going by and cars driving into the parking lot of the Kentucky Fried Chicken place across the road, which it had enraged the Brownell sisters because it put out that thick black smoke and it made grease all over their windows and they weren't able to get it off. I never did get rid of that place. Hope it's gone now. Recollection. Now and then, I cast my mind back. Well, cast your mind back. Not that far, up this way a little bit. It was in the mid-50s, I guess, right around there. Utah was my home for many, many years. One of my fondest recollections was up there in Box Elder County in the northwest corner of the state. That's the Salt Flats. That's out past the Newfoundland Range. I was out working at the Skull Valley Co-op Duck Ranch, way out there in the desert. We had about 40,000 acres of federal ground we leased, and maybe 20,000 head of duck we ran out there at any one time. We brought these fellows up from Mexico to work them, called Dequeros. We call them Duckaroos, of course. But it was beautiful. It's branding and roundup time, the smell of burning feathers and thousands of tiny web feet thundering out over the plains. We filmed a documentary. The only problem we had was that the farmers, the dirty sodbusters, moved in and fenced the open range. That means range war, friends. We snuck out at night and with our pliers, wire cutters, and we cut their barbed wire, and we drove our ducks into their corn, and they ate it up, just like you're eating up mine right now. One of the classics now.
Thank you.
Ah, isn't that marvelous? Spike Jonze and the City Slickers, a voice out of my childhood. My stepfather managed the last vaudeville house in Cleveland, the Hippodrome, and they used to appear there regularly. Well, now, where does that take us? I had a terrible attack of codependency once, the worst kind of codependency you can imagine. I was in a life-threatening situation. I could have lost my life, and somebody else's life passed before my eyes. Now, that's dire. But the worst, the life-threatening situation that I remember the most was on my right shoulder here, on my arm, I've got a tattoo of a balloon, a hot air balloon. I love ballooning. It was given to me by Russ up there in Boise, Idaho, a dermographer, as they call themselves today. And I love ballooning, the hot air balloon. We had a balloon in Saratoga Springs, the four of us, called the Grand Union. We never had to use burners on it. I could stand in the basket and direct my remarks upward to inflate the thing. No, the Grand Union was a real balloon. And I recall once the Glens Falls balloon race. The wind was headed south that day, and we were in it. That balloon lost altitude. It was a minor malfunction in the heating system, and we landed with a thump. But we landed right smack in the middle of the town square in the little town of Greenwich, New York, on the other side of the Hudson River. Now, that town had only one cop at that time. It was a little elderly fellow who loved to wave his pistol around. Now, to meet situations like that, balloon aeronauts in the basket there carry a magnum of champagne. It's standard equipment and some good crystal glasses. If you land in some farmer's field and he dashes out there with a shotgun, by the time he gets to you, you have decanted that champagne and poured it into a glass and are extending it toward him as he arrives. Now, you can't shoot people who behave like that. So we decanted the champagne, poured the glass. The little cop ran up to us and informed us that that was a local option town and that the whole place was dry, and he was going to arrest us for having an open container. Well, the town council convened there in Greenwich, New York, and that consisted of the banker from that corner and the druggist from that corner and the clothing store operator from the other corner. They assembled around the balloon as we got the burners going. And they had a little informal town council meeting where they temporarily suspended that ordinance, drank up all the champagne as we lofted ourselves into the air and waving goodbye. It was a wonderful moment. And now, a word from our sponsors.
I'd rather have a piece of chicken.
Too bad.
Chickens for peace, we're chickens for peace, and we don't want to fry. Chickens for peace, we're chickens for peace. One little war, and we're chicken pot pie.
Chickens for peace, we're chickens for peace,
and no one respects a chicken who bakes.
Chickens for peace, we're chickens for peace. One little slip, and we're hard-boiled eggs. Chickens for peace, we're chickens for peace. But we're not chickens, we're taking a stand. Chickens for peace, we're chickens for peace. And our chicken spirit sweeping the land. The doves and the hawks are still fighting. The swans and the ducks are all wet. But us chickens
isn't that wonderful? That's my favorite peace song. It's my favorite kids song. You see a bunch of kids at a peace camp. Now, we're going to have a peace camp around here. Susan Hopkins is putting that together here in Nevada City. And get all of those kids singing that together with the chickens. You can have chickens out there, live ones. Well, where does that leave us? I was thinking about things that have really affected and changed my life over the years. Another one of my great loves is language. You've probably surmised that I love good language as much as I can possibly get away with. I'm vastly enamored of the English language and all the things that it's able to do. I think of, in English, you can say anything you want, any way you want, with any kind of nuance. Some time ago, I was just thinking of the verb to throw, just the verb to throw, and all of the ways that you can endow that word with taste, with flavor. To throw, bowl, blast, boot, bounce, cast, chuck, chunk, fling, float, huck, hurl, heave, launch, lob, loft, pitch, shoot, sail, send, skip, sling, shy, throw, toss, waft, and wing. That's a poem all by itself. Poem. All right. I was lying in bed reading a couple nights ago, and I was reading a pretty dumb book, and I wasn't really paying attention to it, and I found out as I was drifting off that I was subtracting the words so that the only thing left was the punctuation. And I thought to myself, if you got rid of the words and only left the punctuation, what would you have? Would there be any meaning left? Does punctuation have meaning by itself without the words to which they are attached? And so Joanna, my wife, and I, we sat down and we just listed all the punctuation, period, comma, semicolon, colon, exclamation point, question mark, parenthesis, ellipses, quotation, dash, hyphen, and apostrophe. And by God, I found, yes, they do have meaning, and you can sit down and write poems just with punctuation. Here's a haiku I made out of punctuation. Now, wasn't that great? Just punctuation. It's an interesting thing. You know, you can act out. The punctuation have gestures and facial expressions that you can attach to them. Like you raise your forehead, and that's a question mark. Here's that same haiku done just with gestures. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? Now, another word from our sponsors.
I only have about enough grass left to roll one joint.
Oh, that's okay, Ted. I'll just mix it up real good with this.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm making marijuana helper.
Marijuana helper?
That's right. With Pillsburger's new marijuana helper, there'll be enough of this Colombian to go around for everybody. And look, marijuana helper makes our dope look as rich and potent as the best red bud.
Marijuana helper.
Now you can get as much as 3 ounces from every ounce you buy, thanks to Pillsburger's new marijuana helper.
Honey, you're a genius.
There. Now put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Pillsburger's new marijuana helper from the makers of Angel Dust Cake. Pillsburger.
It really works.
Chicken bit them.
Thank you.
Kenny Hall, Blind Kenny Hall, isn't that a wonderful piece of music? Man has more joy and more exuberance and more bounce. You know, he's in his 70s now, and he's turning along. I use a lot of field recordings. I got about, 1,500 tape recordings, as I've said before. So much of it was underwater for a long time as the basement flooded. It's traveled with me, migrated as I have all over the country. My wife Joanna finally indexed all of those things into a big blue book, and my friend Cuddy is finishing that job, so I know what I've got. And oh, it is the detritus of a misspent existence. Field recordings do not meet any engineering standard that you care to mention, and I know that the engineers at a lot of the stations that carry Loafer's Glory wince when they hear these drugstore recordings, you know, these ridiculous machines that none of us knew how to use anyway. I want to give you a good example of the exuberance of field recording, though. My stepson, Ian, spent a year in Ecuador. His friend Ben went down there to visit him, and Ben had this inexpensive tape recorder with him to send home letters. Well, they were with a guide taken out into the over the Andes into the Amazon basin, into one of the tributaries of the Amazon, way out in the jungle, and they stumbled across a lost construction camp, and everybody in there was just blind drunk, and they were singing at the top of their lungs, and that's when Ben whipped out his tape recorder and he captured this love song.
Uno, a dos, a uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
Qué bonitos ojos tienes, que los vuelva a reír. Qué bonitos labios tienes, que los besaré. Tengo miedo, miedo de amar. Ya no quiero otra vez sufrir. El viento, mariposita,
posita, posita.
Vuela con el viento,
viento,
mariposita.
Now that's the real article, folks. You know that, out of the jungle and into your ear. Well, move along more quickly here. One of my favorite songs, and certainly the favorite rendition of that song, the old Knickerbocker Holiday. Musical from in the 1930s, Walter Houston as Peter Stuyvesant, the aging governor of the Dutch colony of New York. Walter Houston on Broadway sang the theme song of that musical, September Song.
May to December, and the days grow short. When you reach September, and I have lost one too, and I walk a little lame, and I haven't got time for the waiting game. And the days turn to gold as they grow few, September, November, and these few golden days I'd spend with you. These golden days I'd spend with you. When you meet with the young men early in spring, they court you in song and rhyme. They woo you with words and a clover ring. But if you examine the goods they bring, they have little to offer but the songs they sing and a plentiful waste of time of day. A plentiful waste of time. But it's a long, long while from May to December. Will the clover ring last till you reach September? And I'm not quite equipped for the waiting game, but I have a little money and I have a little fame. And the days dwindle down to a precious few, September, November. And these few precious days I'd spend with you. These precious days I'd spend with you.
Walter Houston, September Song with the original words. Isn't that an incredibly beautiful piece of work? It's as cliche, I know, but they don't write songs like that anymore, and God knows I don't. There are embarrassments that overwhelm your life as you progress through it. Embarrassments that you find it painful to recall, have to live down, and somehow have to propitiate. And I'm about to do that now. My comeuppance, I'm going to call myself to task. I remember 1961, I was sitting in the coffee shop at the University of Utah where the engineering students hung out because I was practicing to be an intellectual. Those engineering students were sitting around grousing about how the Russians, the Soviet Union, had lofted the first astronaut into space. That was Yuri Gagarin. Remember Yuri Gagarin? And they were whining and pissing and moaning about, well, how could they do that? We were supposed to do that first. And it just made me mad. And I went out and I wrote a song about Yuri Gagarin. Now it is the worst song certainly I've ever made. It's one of the worst songs that I have ever heard. Some misguided soul sent me a tape recording of that old record from 1961 about Yuri Gagarin. I abandoned that song. I cut it loose. It was no longer part of my life. I saved the idea. I recall when Amin Desai was the Prime Minister of India long ago, and he was the first non-Gandhi Prime Minister of India, but he was a Jain, reverence for life, and part of his dietary discipline was to drink a glass of his own pee every morning. So I rewrote the song as Gargle Your Urine. Nonetheless, we're going to listen to, God help me, Yuri Gagarin.
On the 12th day of April 1961, a day that history records, from over the ocean across many miles, they sent us this triumphant word. That a young Russian pilot had soared from the earth and traveled the world around. It was a brave deed, we must all agree, the first time it ever was done. Yuri Gagarin, oh Yuri Gagarin, he rode into the sky on a pillar of flame, and he gave us his name in a story that never will die. We've had many heroes in our great country who have worked to make us strong. Our Daniel Boone and our Edison too, well known in story and song. But now in a man from a far distant land, a hero we all find. He shows to the world in his bold, reckless deed the spirit of all mankind. Yuri Gagarin, oh Yuri Gagarin, he rode into the sky on a pillar of flame, and he gave us his name in a story that never will die. It is a shame when you look at the world and the men who make all the wars. The effort we spend in struggle and strife could carry us all to the stars. So let's put aside all our anger and pride. Here's credit where credit is due. Let's stand and applaud this young pioneer who did what no other could do. Yuri Gagarin, oh Yuri Gagarin, rode into the sky on a pillar of flame, and he gave us his name in a story that never will die.
There, I've done it. I've done it, by God. I've paid myself back by embarrassing and humiliating myself in front of hundreds of people. Hundreds of people. I remember sitting on the stage there in Binghamton, New York, State University of Binghamton, SUNY Binghamton, sitting on the stage, and the college baseball team was sitting all along the front row in uniform. And on their uniforms, each and every one of them said Moose Turd Pie. They had named the baseball team Moose Turd Pie. Of course, then it was incumbent upon me to tell that tale from whence the story derived. But then it was only 6 months later, I was playing in a little coffee house in New Jersey. It was called The Good, Though. How a story will get around, how it will tangle itself into your life, I have no choice about what's going to be on my tombstone. One last time, I am privileged to tell you, Moose Turd Pie. Went down and got a job with the rural electrification in the Navajo Indian Reservation. Running electric power lines into all the Navajo outhouses. I was one of the first people to wire ahead for a reservation. Finally, I'll tell you about the worst job I ever had in my life. Worst job I ever had in my life was working for the Santa Fe Railroad south of Las Vegas, Nevada. Yeah, that's the old Mormon Muddy Mission, you see. It's way out in what the Navajos call the boonies, out in the desert. Now, the job was Gandhi dancing. Now, Gandhi dancing used to be in the old days. Gandhi dancing was when the Irish were building the railroad. Of course, the first transcontinental railroad was built by Irish laborers. And they used these long-handled shovels called Irish banjos that were made by the Gandhi Shovel Company of Chicago. Now, the Irish laborer would take the wide end of the shovel when he could find it, and he would jam it in under a rail or a tie, and he would climb out on the long handle, do a little jig step out there, and that would lever the tie up or the rail up, and you push gravel in underneath it and tamp it down, and that levels the roadbed. See, that's what Gandhi dancing is. Leveling the roadbed so the damn train doesn't fall off as it goes by, which is just a big drag for everybody. Now, they don't do Gandhi dancing the normal way anymore, see, like they did in the old days. Nowadays, they run three cars out on the line. They run a box car out there that's a bunk car. You sleep in it. Got bunks in there 18 inches apart. And then you got a tool car with your tamping irons and your tongs and your double jack hammers and spikes and all of that equipment, see, to do the job. And then you got a cook car. I mean, there's no restaurants anyplace around, so you got a cook car. Pots and pans and a coal or wood-burning stove and a long table down the middle to eat at. Only thing they don't hire is a cook. That's because they're cheap. Saves them money. The rule is that in that crew, they're supposed to pick among their own members who's going to be the cook. Now, they don't try to do it sensibly, like draw lots or decide who the best cook is. What they do is they wait
and find out who bitches and whines and pisses and moans the most about the cooking. And they say, all right, wise guy, you think you can do better, you get to be the cook. Well, that was me, see. Old alligator mouth. The new man on the crew, and that was the worst food I'd ever had. I mean, it was dog bottom pie and pheasant sweat. Otter water comes out of an otter. It's a terrible, terrible stuff. Some people might think it's a delicacy, but I thought it was garp. So I complained, and they said, all right, wise guy, you get to be the cook. That made me mad, because I didn't want to cook. But I knew if anybody complained about my cooking, that they were going to have to cook. Armed with that knowledge, I sallied forth over the muddy river. I was walking around among the cheatgrass and bunch grass there, and I looked down, and there was just a hell of a big moose turd. Biggest damn moose turd, that was a real steamer, damn. I looked down at that meadow wafer, and I said to myself, self, I'm gonna bake up a big moose turd pie. Because if anybody complains about my cooking, they're going to have to cook. So I tipped that pasture pastry up on edge. I got my shit together, so to speak. And I started rolling it down toward the old cook car. Boom, boom. I got it down there and leaned it up against the side, and I climbed up in the cook car and I baked up a hell of a big pie shell. And I baked that moose turd in it as slick as you please. And I crimped the edges with my thumbs and laid strips of dough across it and garnished it with a sprig of parsley, a little paprika. It was beautiful. Poetry on a plate. And I served it for dessert, waiting for the first hint of a complaint. Well, this giant dude come in, about 5'40". I mean, he was big. Throwed himself down like a fool on the stool. Picked up his fork, took a big bite of that moose turd pie. Well, he threw down his fork, and he let out a beller, and he yelled, my God, that's moose turd pie! It's good, though.
Oh, there it is. There it is. You see, so you go stumbling through the bushes and weeds to find out where I'm planted, and you will run across a humble marble stone, and the words engraved on the front will be, good though. Well, now, influences on my life, of course, the hobo, the traveling life, the freight trains. I've loved that life. I'm looking forward to continuing it. The 100th anniversary of the Hobo Convention in Britt, Iowa is coming up, closing in on us at a blinding rate of speed. I have been inveigled or prevailed upon to go back there and run for the King of Hobos here in the New Bolognium. I think I'm going to decline that singular honor and go to another convention of younger tramps. I think it would serve some more useful purpose. Nonetheless, I had, if this occasion should arrive, prepared a speech. You have to deliver a speech, and then the people decide which speech they like the best, and then you get be elected King of the Hobos. So I'll give you just a little bit of that speech, okay? Friends and brothers, for many years now, we have all understood that railroads exist solely to carry persons such as ourselves from one place to another. The business of transporting freight simply helps to defray the expense of this noble and much-needed endeavor. I would like to take this opportunity to publicly commend the Union Pacific, Burlington Northern, Denver, Rio Grande, and Western, and similar charitable organizations for their benign efforts in our behalf, and to offer my heartfelt thanks for affording us the opportunity to spend so many carefree hours watching the pleasant landscape flow by. Oh, the rich pageantry, the bracing mountain air, sparkling lakes and snow-capped peaks spread out before us like a handful of jewels. Lulled into blissful reverie by the gentle swaying of our noble chariots, we gaze enraptured at the panoramic splendor of America. Let us sing.
great Atlantic Ocean to the wide Pacific shore, to the green and growing mountains and the south belt by the shore. She ain't so tall and handsome, but she's quite well known by all. She's a modern combination on the Wabash Cannonball. You listen to the jingle, the rumble and the roar. She glides along the woodlands, through the hills and by the shore. Hear the mighty rush of the engine, hear the lonesome hobo call. You're traveling through the jungles on the Wabash Cannonball. States are dandy, so the people always say. From New York to Chicago and Rock Island by the way. From the hills of Minnesota where the rippling waters fall. No changes can be taken on the Wabash Cannonball. You listen to the jingle, the rumble and the roar. She glides along the woodlands, through the hills and by the shore. Hear the mighty rush to the engine, hear the lonesome hobo call. You're traveling through the jungles on the Wabash Cannonball.
Well, we had to fade that one out a little bit quick, but hell, everybody's heard that song more than enough anyway. We're running out of time, and I did want to squeeze in at the end my favorite union song. You know, I've been in the labor movement all of my life, and my most profound association was with the industrial workers of the world, the IWW, the Wobblies, characterized by John Greenway himself as a banzai charge on capitalism, an assault on the upper crust, which, as you know, is a handful of crumbs held together by a wad of dough. Here's General Strike, a bunch of workers up there in Portland singing Rotten Bosses.
We join hands
with Joe Hill,
Ralph Chaplin, and Florence Reese. Stand together in this fight for our rights. Hear our call, equal rights for workers all, and go to hell. Rotten bosses, go to hell. Well, I was alone. So I picked up my telephone.
Who'd you call?
And I called my union hall.
What'd you tell them?
Said I'm tired of this shit. I'm fed up. You know I've had it, so go to hell. Rotten bosses, go to hell.
If at work you feel beat, fight back, get off your seat. Rally behind your union's banner. The boss plays golf.
Go to hell. Rotten bosses, go to hell.
Well, thanks for helping me celebrate my 65th. This is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and you have been listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Who said it's time to pass the torch? Hell, I'm not done with it. You want this torch, you'll have to pry it from my cold, dead fingers. Tell you what, I'll carry the torch. You carry me, huh?